and welcome to the Mindful World Parenting Summit. I am so excited to be joined today by none other than Barnett Bain. Barnett is a writer, director, producer who has been at the forefront of transformational entertainment. He's brought us truly inspirational films such as What Dreams May Come, The Celestine Prophecy, and one of my favorites, which we're going to talk a little bit about today, which is Milton's Secret. Barnett is also an author and creativity expert and a coach who has created a program in collaboration with the Take Your Daughters and Sons to Work Foundation that is all about jumpstarting creativity in your children and ourselves. He is here today to talk to us about just that, how we can foster creativity in ourselves and our children and truly live an expansive creative life. Welcome, Barnett, to the summit.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here and for all that you do. And as we were talking about just before we started recording today, your whole career has really been really awakening people to the possibilities and inspiring and with this notion of that we can be bigger, we can be really step into our creativity. And so I absolutely love the fact that you created this program that parents can do alongside their children. And so tell me, like, maybe you can summarize for us, how can parents jumpstart creativity in their kids and in their own life to find that inspiration or those aha moments, as you call it?
Well, there are many, many things, large and small, to begin the process of that. Mm-hmm. The root of it is really to remember that our children, they learn by watching. And they learn primarily by watching us. Mm-hmm. So how we behave, how we respond, the choices that we make in our lives, these are the building blocks that establish our children's operating systems. And so if we want our children to become more resourceful and to have an expanded imagination, to explore more possibilities, it begins with us. We want to foster those talents and those skill sets within ourselves. And our children are watching. They're watching with senses that are familiar to us, our eyes, our ears, and smell. They're watching with those senses, but they're also they're attuned with unfamiliar senses. It's almost as though they are aware of what is being broadcast by us. Mm. And so when we begin to make small adjustments, suspending our judgments about things, suspending our reactivity about things, when we begin to pay attention to why we have certain reactions to things, particularly in these very, very challenging times where we can be so triggered by the thoughts and the expressions of others, by the politics of others, by the health practices of others. We can become so triggered. Well, if we, as parents, begin to pay attention to what is it in me that is being triggered? Mm-hmm. Well, I have a story about how life ought to be, should be, could be, would be. And it is in opposition to what is coming in. And so I'm becoming reactive. Our children map to this. Mm-hmm. And if we are able to slow it down for ourselves and be aware that I am having a story that I hold very tightly that I may not have been very conscious of that is being challenged right now. If I slow it down so that I choose to respond differently to it, I don't have to deny it. I don't have to ignore it. I don't have to challenge it. That's a lot to take on. But I can be curious. Mm. I can respond with, look what's going on with me. Huh, That creates some space in our very tightly wound stories, our very tightly wound imagination circumstances. Everything is imagined. It creates some space. And our children are very sensitive to that. And when they see us creating room, we are in turn generating more possibility for our children. That is probably the very, very most powerful technique that I have come upon in 65 years. Very powerful. Another thing is to become more and more alive to what is going on with us right here, right now. We have such a love affair with thinking and over-strategizing and trying to outthink life itself. If this, then that. And take a breath to slow it down, to be attentive and attuned to what is going on in our bodies. What do I feel? Do I feel anything? Do I feel numb? Do I feel the tingling? Do I feel energy moving through it? Do I feel heavy, light, nothing? We begin to restore a relationship with our full being, bit by bit by bit, as opposed to living life entirely from the eyes up. Living life only through cognitive processes. There are other kinds of intelligence. And to be more fully human, more fully functional, more fully creative, we want to engage as many of those different kinds of intelligence. Now, I can hear many people, I can imagine many people saying, well, what other kind of intelligences are there? There's just thinking. Well, there's musical intelligence and emotional intelligence, and any dancer or athlete can talk to you about the physical intelligences that respond to inputs without going, being channeled through thinking, through linear cognitive activity. They're just a different set of responses. So when our children witness those kinds of behaviors, they can also feel them. When they witness their parents enjoying the smell of morning air, without strategizing, without making an if-then, without making it transactional, when they witness our parents, when we see children see parents who are tuning into the quality of their experience, here's a technique. If you imagine a time in your life when you were in the flow, you know, you imagine when you are in the athletic zone, you know, and you run a ball or catch a ball or hit a ball or swim a lap, or you're in the garden and you see you're so engaged in it, you lose track of time and space, you're playing a musical instrument, you're just... So I start, as an example, by reflecting on a time when I was in the flow. It might be when I'm watching my children or doing sports or Christmas gifts under the tree, and I tune into what is the quality of that experience, what was the feeling of it, how did it feel, how did it feel in my body, did it feel warm, did it feel cold, did it feel... I look for the most wonderful moment, and I call those that feeling the most amazing thing. And it can always bring me into touch with a peace that is available to me at all times. So we are usually in pursuit of substitutes for the most amazing thing. We think it's popularity we want, or a partner, or a job, or the money, or success. And, you know, and we strategize. We go to the head to try and figure that out. These things are never alone. They aren't the most amazing thing. They're always substitutes for this deeper feeling. And so if I can return at will and practice to experiencing the most amazing thing as often as I can, as often as I want, I ask myself, am I focusing on the most amazing thing or am I focusing on a substitute? That moment is something that I call the aha moment. As we practice it, it provides increased well-being and resilience, with which a handy tool with which to deal with the challenges of life right now. And it turbocharges the developmental potential, creative potential of our children. There is nothing that fuels the fire of developmental creativity in our children. Nothing that comes close to that. To see your parents engaged in the experience, the feeling of well-being, cuts through all logic and reason, cuts through all habits of learning how to out-strategize life. It cuts through to what is most beautiful and good and true in being human. So this is perhaps the tentpole, the center of gravity of that what we can offer our children as a model that allows them to hang their own renditions on that central pole. They'll find their own expressions of it. But they first want to see what it looks like to expand possibilities of imagination outside of logic. If this, then that, because of this, then that, outside of logic and reason. Logic and reason is wonderful. But logic and reason alone will not bring us to a world becoming new. Logic and reason only gives us the ability to recreate, to go into the file cabinet of what was, search through for best practices. It doesn't give us the opportunity or give us a model, a path forward to innovate, to become resilient, to meet the challenges of life with other tools, tools of self-care, of well-being, developing a sense, an increased portfolio for what it means to love self and to love others. Love is not a head trip. So more than ever before, we all and our children will be better served to learn other tools and other school, other skills by which they can meet life.
I love that, the most amazing thing. I love that. And I, what you're telling, like as a psychologist, I'm listening to you and the power of the mind, like we can practice the catastrophe, right? And we do it like unconsciously so quickly. And that's just the human brain as well. But having this intentional practice of the most amazing thing. And I love the possibility of even talking about that, or when I see like something happening with my children too, right? Like when they, my daughter just sitting there creating a song out of nothing as she's just sitting there playing with her hands, and I'm just in awe. Or when I see my son like hitting a baseball, and it's just like, oh, like this moment of flow, as you said. But and also practicing it myself, for myself.
You're speaking to another piece of it, because what you're talking, what you're saying, what it brings up for me is that there's a reciprocity in being with your child in that way. the message is, it's not what you do that I love. It's who you are that I love.
Yeah.
It's not what you do, but who you are that I love.
Yeah.
Now, you can say that and say that. That certainly doesn't hurt to say it. But to be it requires that we ourselves begin to value ourselves in a different way. So that when we so that we can express it, so that we can model it for our children. From that, they have access to creative resources that are endless, they're boundless. I give you permission to be different than me without losing my love.
Right. I love that. So it's so interesting because you are a endlessly creative being in terms of like people will know that of you from your professional role in terms of work that you do. But, you know, I think this conversation challenges us to think about creativity more broadly in terms of how we even engage with each moment of our day, the problems that come between us as in relationship or problems that might be in the world, but just being able to kind of think outside the box and like what might be the solution and to approach that maybe in a joyful way.
Well, let's look at what the box is. We go to sleep at night and we have dreaming experiences and suddenly the walls of the box expand and they become permeable and the ceiling and the floor drops, the ceiling raises. So let's look at what the box is. The box is imagination itself. That's the box. And our imaginations become bounded. I call them structured imagination. They're structured by the circumstances of our lives, particularly our young lives. This is why to foster creativity in our children doesn't help, you know, take my advice, I'm not using it. If you want your children to flourish, you must flourish. So the imagination gets structured by its exposure to other people's thinking and values and entertainment and politics and religion and television and messaging. And some of them we buy into and others we reject. And those things become the boundaries of what we allow ourselves. We want to be good boys and girls, and we want to fit in, and we want to be praised. And so these things become tribal rules, family contracts. Some of them unwritten contracts, nonetheless. They become very rigid, and they define what is possible for us in life and in love. They define who we allow ourselves to give heart to and who we allow ourselves to receive heart from. They are the boundaries by which we separate ourselves from others, or we have the ability to expand and to become at one with them. So that is the box. The box almost entirely is a mental construct. Almost entirely. Some of the early trauma of our lives going all the way back to in utero. These traumas are not even our own. They're our mother's traumas. We take them on, and some of the, you know, they get grounded in the body. And then as we move through life, there are circumstances that we meet and that unfold that are similar or familiar or the same, sometimes remotely similar to traumas from long past that are held in the body, and we get triggered.
Mm-hmm.
And we respond, sometimes in very large ways, sometimes in ways that are out of all proportion to what is apparently going on. And mm-hmm. these responses, they're not about here. These thoughts and feelings we have are not about now. They are old thoughts and they're old feelings, and they are not about now.
Right.
Which, all of which is to demonstrate how powerful that box is when we talk about getting out of the box. We will not think our way out of the box. The tools that got us into the box are not the tools to get us out of the box. So the gifts that we can avail ourselves, that are available to us to receive, that will expand the box, that will lighten up the heavy structure of our imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Those are feeling states. Part of the box is that we're afraid of our feelings. So much so that many of us are not aware that we have any. We're numb from it. Again, threading this back to the impact that we can have on our children.
Mm-hmm.
When we allow ourselves to begin either with the most amazing thing, we develop a relationship, an intimacy, a closeness, a tenderness with feelings, beautiful feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And not to be afraid of feelings that are difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Primal feelings.
Yes.
Primal feelings are rage. Oh, no, I don't have rage. You know, people mm-hmm. say, I don't have rage. Well, everybody has rage. These are primal feelings. And if you have a little puppy or a little baby and you take it off the breast, it's enraged.
Right.
It's not about being polite.
Sure.
There's nothing bad or wrong with them. And we want to understand that these live in us. And if I can not be frightened of them and feel them in ways that are appropriate and safe, they'll move through. And when we don't, they come at us as the way of the world.
Mm-hmm.
We are certainly... we're moving through times that are challenging and filled with heightened emotionality that doesn't seem to make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
Such denied emotions in each of us, and they come at us as the way of the world.
Yeah. So
we want our children to have exposure to certain models of
mm-hmm.
that are in the body, right here, right now. I feel awkward. I feel a little angry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I feel the most amazing thing. Okay. Let your child see that.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have to act it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's see that. And what
right.
happens when you feel a feeling? There are no bad feelings. They're only the one, whether they are, when they're unfelt, they become toxic.
Right, right.
You let them pass, and the child watches that.
Mm-hmm.
A very mm-hmm. small child that has the most dramatic feelings, and then 5 minutes later, they're gone.
Very true, very true.
Train that out of them. Yes.
You know, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about the models, all the models that we have for feeling. And, you know, you are in the entertainment world. And I just, what flashed in my mind as I'm listening to you is like all of the models of the unfeeling hero, right? These like numb kind of do the thing, no feeling kind of approach, like our, you know, and you're just like, wow, like we don't see a whole lot of, you know, at least of many popular, very popular movies, the nuance of feeling. And what you put out in the world is kind of the opposite of that. And, you know, it does bring me to this beautiful film that you made, Milton's Secret. And in particular, these really nuanced performances, and Donald Sutherland, who's the star of this film, and he channels, maybe that's him, I don't know, maybe that's you, something happened in like that film where I can watch that so many times, and I've actually recommended it to clients of mine to watch it. It's really interesting to hear what people pick up on. And so I'm wondering if you could talk to us a little bit about this film and what motivated you to make it, and what you hope people take away from this movie that you put in the world.
Well, thank you for asking that. I want to pick up, first of all, on something that you said that is very near and dear to me. Mm-hmm. This infatuation that we have with heroes, mm-hmm. Unhealthy. I'm not interested in heroes. Mm-hmm. Heroes are appropriate for adolescents, mm-hmm. not for adults.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay.
A mature human being should move through the hero stage. Earth journey and all of this stuff, that is about, you're a therapist, so you well know that is about the individuation from the mother. It is not a prescription for how to live your life. Meeting challenges and obstacles, meet conflict, that is not a prescription. Not a template for how to live a meaningful life, and then to save, be a savior of self and others, and to martyr. And this is not a roadmap for it, except struggle and hierarchy, and it's a roadmap for schoolyard politics. Heroes. So I'm interested in a post-heroic.
Interesting. Okay. Tell me more.
I'm not interested in heroes. I'm interested in authentic human being. And so Milton's Secret is a movie about a child, impressionable, who is on the one hand exposed to his parents, to conventional challenge, yet with struggle. And a grandfather who is not in the hero cult. And who provides an alternative for the boy, an alternative roadmap for how to conduct himself through life. By being present, not being overwhelmed and intoxicated by awful, I call it awfulizing. This terrible thing is going to happen. That terrible thing is going to happen.
Awfulizing, I love that. Yeah.
You know, we learn how to awfulize. We learn how to bully ourselves. That is what bullying is. It begins as an inside job. And then eventually... we all are so adept at it that we train each other, and pretty soon it goes from inside to outside, and we either become victims or we become bullies. Same thing. So this is all part of the hero cult. Very, very unhealthy. Very immature. And it's supported by everything. So... Milton's Secret is a story of a boy who is dealing with the hero cult in his school, in his world, in his neighbor who's a bully, who bullies him, and everywhere. And who is blessed to have a model of an alternative way of meeting life in his grandfather, played by Donaldson. Who supports him in becoming more and more present and less attached to the thoughts and belief. Not, he, you know, Donald Sutherland says to him, don't believe everything that goes on in your head.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a signal.
Mm.
Moving through. Mm. So it is a story of a little boy who's blessed to have that relationship and a rite of passage in some ways that is triumphant, which is a different order of that is a triumph that is more than victory. It's not about victory over, it is about lifting oneself to a triumphant understanding.
I love that.
So victory is the hero's motto.
Okay, so the distinction being victory is like a domination over.
Domination. Triumph is superseding self. Like when a rose springs up and you get the calyx and then it bursts into bloom. That is a triumphant moment, but it's not better than the calyx and the leaves.
I see. I love that.
Developmental progression.
Mm.
And so that is really what the movie is about. And it models certain behaviors and certain sets of choices that are clear alternatives to awfulizing.
Mm-hmm.
And it does it in this in a as beautiful way as I could imagine.
Yeah, it truly is such a beautiful offering. And what I love is this modeling of what it, because this thing that we're doing here is Mindful World Parenting Summit. This world of mindfulness is now everywhere. What does that mean in terms of how we live? What does that mean in terms of how we engage? And what I love about this film is that there's these beautiful moments of examples of like, no, this is, we do these practices and these things so we can actually be present and show up in this loving and compassionate way, even with ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this word mindfulness, it is, for me, it speaks to developing a closeness and tenderness with the cognitive process. So that instead of being identified with it, instead of splashing around in the pool, I can sit on the edge of the pool and become relational. I don't want to be identified with it. That's a hero's journey. I don't want to be about challenge, impact.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be in a struggle or in a me you relationship to the world.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to, and the tools for that are logic and reason and mindfulness. If this, then that. And there's a whole structure, a hierarchical structure of built on that, a whole architecture.
Mm-hmm.
So mindfulness is first of all becoming aware of that, and then it leads to something else that is not mindfulness at all. It leads to an embodied, it's embodiedness. Mm-hmm. And then our sense of what is the body. You know, and in our religious texts, there are pointers to what is the body. In Christianity, there is the body of Christ. What is that? So at some point when we relax our over-identification with logic and reason, we can begin to open up to, well, here is my body. Can I feel aliveness in it instead of only in my cognitive activity? Can I feel the aliveness? Can I feel energy moving through it? now can I feel attuned to the tree outside? Can I feel attuned to the people across the table from me? Can I feel attuned to the community? It's one thing at a time. We can't one beat at a time. But what is my aliveness? Again, at night in the dream state, I still move through the territory, pretending I've got this little avatar that I see through. But in the morning, I realize I created the avatar. I created the entire world. The whole thing was my body. This is not different. And we begin to slowly wake up to that. We begin to wake up to that. We begin to understand that how I treat myself extends to how I treat others. There are no others.
So interesting.
But there is a complex scaffolding of logic and reason that separates me from others, and that is a cognitive construct of strategies in order to dominate others, heroes.
I see. Yeah. Interesting.
So this is coming down. It won't just collapse, but it's coming down. It's been coming down for thousands of years, but it's accelerating.
Well, I know this is such an epic conversation in itself. I mean, so much and so many connections, and you're referencing this incredible tumultuous but important time that we're in right now. And some would say that this pandemic is a sign of like a massive paradigm shift. And you've kind of answered it possibly, but I'm going to ask you more directly. What is your hope for how humanity might evolve as a result of this really special time that we're in?
So, my hope for how I will evolve, I'm not separate from humanity. I don't want to leap frog.
Okay.
My process is the bridge. I hope that I will become, I will gain more and more humility. By humility, I'm not talking about modesty. I want to collapse the boundaries of my structured imagination so they're not so rigid. So that even though every crow I see outside my window has appeared to be black, in the very next moment I could see a gray one. So I want to relax my fixed ideas about life, about myself, about other expressions of myself, people. And in so doing, I can imagine more well-being. A greater sense of greater capacity to both give and to receive love and care of others, to feel it. And I wish that for myself and for other people and for the world. So one of the, I'm not suggesting for one second that the pandemic is a good thing. But I have an opportunity, as do we all, to make the best lemonade I can out of this basket of lemons. So how can I respond to this dreadful, dreadful crisis in a way that is affirming and uplifting and expands my my experience of who I am and expands my experience of others.
Mm-hmm.
That is
great.
My wish for it.
Awesome. I am on board with your wish. Tell me what do you see that we're doing well that makes you feel hopeful about the future?
We're peeling back the layers of story. Mm-hmm. We're peeling them back. You know, therapists call this the shadow, and we are embracing more and more of the layers of shadow complexity.
Mm-hmm.
More and more we are recognizing and acknowledging and owning the rigidity of our stories, of our narratives.
Mm-hmm.
We're recognizing how tribal they are and how familiar they are, how community-based they are, how culturally based they are, how familially based they are.
Mm-hmm.
We're becoming more and more aware of how they're constructed. Not all of them, some of them, enough of them. We can only take in what we can take in.
Mm-hmm.
And we are putting Humpty Dumpty back together again.
Hopefully in a new way.
Often said, and I'm going to mangle this, but you can't change everything we face. But we can't change anything without facing it. I've mangled it, but you get the point.
I get it. We got it. Yeah.
We are more deeply in the process of that.
Mm-hmm.
Systemically.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal. There have always been individuals from whom the lights went on.
Mm-hmm.
But a whole culture at the same time.
Yeah.
This is... It's epochal change. I mean, it's so beautiful, and it is such a privilege. And well, no, but who said it has to be easy?
Right. Well, I don't know that it can be. But I'm
feeling a lot of feelings that have been taboo, and now we are allowing ourselves to vent them and to feel them in ways that are healthier, mm-hmm. much healthier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, Barnett, you've shared so much in this interview, and we've got so much great advice also for parents and that are watching, anyone who's watching. And I'm wondering if there was one thing that you would like our viewers to action today that you think would make a big difference for themselves and their families, what would that be?
Well, I do. I definitely believe in the modeling of power, particularly the modeling power of films.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of their gifts. They either reinforce old narratives, or they present new ones. Milton's Secret was built to present a new narrative. So I heartily recommend to our listeners that they take advantage of the opportunity to see the film for free.
Yes.
And I'm very grateful to Mindful World for providing access for free to whoever wants to come and watch Milton's Secret. And so I hope that people will go to www.miltonsecret.com and watch the film, and maybe watch it with families, watch it with your children, watch it with your parents.
Mm-hmm.
And one other thing that I would love you to take away is... please just remember the love. Remember the love.
Absolutely. We could base our whole world on that. Can you imagine? Barnett Bain, thank you so, so much for everything you do, everything you shared here today, and for you really like bringing all your gifts and talents. This film that's in secret, again, is so close to my heart. And I love watching it. I do watch it over and over again. And I do believe in the power of image and story and these characters and watching them so honestly, lovingly, you know, falling apart and coming back together. And it's just the thing that we need right now. So, so thankful for you for all of this. Everyone, I will highlight www.miltonsecret.com. You can watch it for free, share it widely, discuss it, reflect on it, watch it again. Barnett, thank you so much for everything you do to make this a more mindful, creative, beautiful, loving world.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Okay, you take care.